could be a leak. Hotel maids, gardeners, chauffeurs, random passersby on the street. There were no limits to who could send in an anonymous tip. Since I couldn't eliminate his sources, I had to eliminate the reason why people wanted to send tips to him specifically. He didn't pay them. But for anyone who wanted to expose a celebrity, get back at someone they felt had wronged them, or simply gain the satisfaction of seeing their tip used, they turned to the biggest fish in the pond. People knew Perry had the means to bring their tips to a huge audience, which brought me to the second pillar of his power, his platforms, specifically his blog and his social media. They were concrete, tangible, which meant they could be taken down. I couldn't do it on my own. I needed an army, and luckily, I knew exactly where to find one. A new message popped up in my encrypted server. My heart skipped a beat as I read and reread it. Confirmed. For the first time since I'd seen Perry's blog post, I smiled. I knew Javier blamed himself for what happened, but it wasn't his fault. I didn't resent him for organizing one of the best days I'd had in a while, but the blog post did light my fire when it came to Perry fucking Wilson. Next to me, the fish swam leisurely in his aquarium. Most people preferred cuddly pets like cats and dogs, but I liked having a fish. Our roles were clear, and our worlds never crossed. He stayed in his house, I stayed in mine. Still, it was nice to have an animate being to talk to when I was home, even when they couldn't talk back. "He's toast," I told the oblivious goldfish. "I will not rest until that man's career is reduced to writing cat food copy for Fast and Furriness." The fish stared at me for a second before swimming away, indifferent to my scheming. My phone rang, and I was so distracted by visions of Perry sobbing over a bowl of wet cat food that I didn't check the caller ID before I answered. "Hello?"
"Sloan?"
The familiar voice dripped ice down my spine. Images of Perry's bad highlights and signature pink bow tie vanished, replaced by floppy brown hair and blue eyes. I straightened, my hand closing tight enough around my phone to elicit a small crack.
"Don't hang up,"
Bentley said.
"I know I'm the last person you want to hear from right now, but we need to talk."
Chapter 30. Sloan. I should have told Bentley to fuck off, but my curiosity won out over anger. That Sunday, 4 days after his call, I got out of a cab and walked into a nondescript bar in a remote area of town. It was 12:30, and the bar was empty thanks to the early hour and holiday weekend. Javier and I had spent a quiet but cozy Thanksgiving at his place. I'd been nervous about celebrating the holiday together. I hadn't spent any holiday with any man since Bentley. But thankfully, Javier didn't make a big deal out of it. We ate, drank, watched movies, and had sex. On one occasion, he convinced me to play strip poker, which ended with us naked on the floor in about 2.5 minutes, and it had nothing to do with the cards. Overall, it was exactly what I needed. The only damper was my meetup with Bentley. I hadn't told Javier about it because there was nothing to tell until I figured out what my ex wanted. So here I was, on a freezing Sunday in the middle of a bar that looked like it hadn't been cleaned since Reagan was in office, just to meet the man who'd cheated on me and broken my heart. I'm an idiot. Bentley was already waiting for me in a corner booth, his blue polo and clean-shaven face a startling contrast against the grunge decor. He rose when he saw me.
"Thanks for coming. I appreciate it."
"Get to the point." I took the seat opposite his and kept my coat on. I wasn't planning on staying long. "I'm busy." Bentley's brow pinched as he sat down again. The son of a big-time financier, he possessed the preppy, all-American good looks of a Ralph Lauren model and the arrogance of someone who'd been rich, popular, and good-looking his entire life. He wasn't used to being treated like an inconvenience, which was too fucking bad because that was what this was.
"It's Georgia."
To his credit, Bentley recovered from my insult remarkably quickly.
"She's having difficulties with her pregnancy."
Of everything I'd expected him to say, that hadn't been one of them. I cocked an eyebrow, confusion mingling with a smidge of concern. I despised Georgia as much as one could despise their sister, but I wasn't a monster. I was, however, confused as to why her husband was telling me instead of literally anyone else in her orbit. "Has she seen a doctor?" I asked. Bentley blinked, then laughed.
"Oh, no, not medical concerns," he said. "She and the baby are fine. She's just been so temperamental. You grew up with her, you know how she can be. She's constantly screaming at me over the stupidest things, like the other day when I didn't get her a frozen hot chocolate at 3 a.m. and she threw a Lalique vase at my head. A Lalique vase. Do you know how expensive that was?"
Any sympathy I had vanished, replaced by an urge to knock Bentley's head against the wall until an iota of common sense rattled in that thick skull of his. "Let me get this straight," I said. "You called me out here on a holiday weekend to complain about being yelled at?"
"I could have died from that vase,"
he said defensively.
"She's out of control."
"She's pregnant, Bentley, which means she's growing an entire human inside her. It's understandable if her hormones get a bit out of control, especially when her husband is a shithead." I couldn't believe I was defending Georgia, but Bentley had his head so far up his own ass, he could give himself a root canal, preferably without Novocaine.
"Yes, well, I didn't expect the pregnancy process to be so messy,"
Bentley said, as if he were discussing a misbehaving pet instead of his wife and unborn child.
"But that's not all. Ever since we saw you at the hospital, she's gotten more paranoid. She accused me of checking you out and said I still had feelings for you. She said she was my second choice and that I'm always comparing her to you. The thing is,"
he leaned forward, his face earnest,
"she's not wrong."
Pin drop silence. I gaped at him. Sure, I'd heard wrong. There was no way he was bold enough and stupid enough to say that to my face. Our server approached before I could respond. Bentley ordered a beer, and after a small pause, I ordered a glass of red wine. After the server left, Bentley continued.
"I didn't mean for things between us to blow up the way they did. You have to understand, you were working all the time. When you were home, all you talked about was Kensington PR. We barely had sex. I felt like I was living with a roommate instead of my fiancé. I needed more of a human connection, you know? Georgia was there, and she was so understanding of my concerns, and, well, she reminded me of you. Except she was a little warmer at the time."
He let out another laugh. A muscle beneath my eye spasmed as our drinks arrived. Our server gave me a sympathetic look. People who worked in bars had a finely tuned asshole radar. But I didn't say a word. Let him dig his own grave deeper.
"I thought she was what I wanted,"
Bentley said.
"But things aren't the same as they used to be. After we got married, she became so demanding. She's always complaining about this or that, and we don't have sex as much as we used to. Plus, she's obsessed with tracking your every move. Did you know she set up a news alert for your name? It's unhealthy. When we saw you at the hospital and she found out you were dating Javier Castillo, she lost it."
"I see." I didn't touch my wine. The news alert revelation was a surprise, but it was exactly the type of thing Georgia would do. She was a huge believer in monitoring her competition.
"I miss you, Sloane."
Bentley gave me a mournful look.
"You were always so calm and rational about things. You'd never throw a vase at my head. I didn't appreciate it at the time, and I should have."
"Interesting," I said coolly. "Because I distinctly remember you calling me an ice queen and telling me that dating me was like dating a block of ice." He blanched.
"I said that in the heat of the moment. I was upset that you seemed to care more about your work than our engagement, so—"
"You fucked my sister on our living room couch and tried to gaslight me into thinking it was my fault? Then you married her a year after you proposed to me and didn't say a single word to me for years until you ran into me and magically realized you were still into me? This wasn't about me or his relationship with Georgia. Maybe there was trouble in paradise, but at the end of the day, Bentley was driven by his ego. He'd seen Javier, who was a better man than him in every single way that counted, and he'd seen Georgia's reaction to him. He felt threatened, so he was trying to claw back power by, one, seducing me away from Javier, two, proving he could get me back despite what he'd done, and three, secretly sticking it to Georgia for whatever slights she'd committed against him. He was more transparent than a poorly stitched web.
It wasn't like that,
Bentley said, his cheeks red.
You have no idea the pressure I was under at the time. I had a lot riding on my transfer to New York, which I'd insisted on so I could be closer to you. Then I got there, and you weren't even paying attention to me. I was insecure, I admit it, but I've been paying for my mistakes since.
He gave me the same puppy dog eyes my younger self could never resist.
We were so good together once. Do you remember London? Us walking by the Thames, eating at the best restaurants every night, checking into a hotel and staying there all weekend. It was perfect.
I ran a hand over the stem of my wine glass, silently taking in the man who'd broken my heart and destroyed my relationship with my family. My father and Georgia weren't blameless, but Bentley had been the trigger. Once upon a time, I'd thought he was the love of my life. I'd been so swept up by his good looks, his deceptively sweet words, and the magic of falling in love abroad like in the rom-coms I watched so often. His proposal was supposed to mark the start of our happily ever after. But happily ever afters didn't always end so happily. And now, after age and experience stripped the rose tint off my glasses, I saw him with crystal clarity. His hair was too perfect, his clothes too pressed, his smile too fake. His words dripped with entitlement instead of a teasing lilt. And what I'd mistaken for charm was simply manipulation wrapped in shiny clothing. He was so utterly boring, so nauseatingly fake, that I couldn't believe I'd ever fallen in love with him. Most of all, I couldn't believe I'd let this asshole scare me away from relationships for so long. He didn't deserve the power I'd given him over me, and I was done letting him ruin my life. I do remember London, I smiled. He smiled back, clearly taking it as a sign that I was warming to his advances. What exactly are you trying to say?
I'm saying we can have that again.
He paused and glanced around.
I can't leave Georgia while she's pregnant, but I know we won't work out in the long term. However, you and I can still rekindle things in the meantime. I know you miss me as much as I miss you.
I'm dating someone, Bentley.
Who, Javier?
He snorted.
Come on, Sloane. We both know that loser isn't good enough for you.
I see, I repeated. My expression didn't waver at my much-hated nickname, Sloane. It was so damn condescending. I'm flattered. And obviously, there's really only one answer.
Obviously,
he said with enough smugness to power an entire fraternity house. Take your proposition and go fuck yourself with it. Bentley blinked. My words registered, and his smile disappeared beneath a mottle of red.
You—
Let me make a few things clear, I spoke over him. One, I would rather sleep with a leprosy-infected ogre before I ever let you touch me again. You are a disgusting, misogynist pig whose brain is inversely proportionate to the size of your giant ego, and you're lucky I was too young when we met to know otherwise. Two, Georgia has many faults, but she and every other woman who's unlucky enough to cross your path deserves better than you. I hope the next time she throws a vase at you, she doesn't miss. Three, Javier is 10 times the man you could ever hope to be. He's smarter, kinder, and better in bed. I cocked my head. Newsflash, Bentley. You're not the sex god you think you are. Your technique is shit, and you couldn't find a clit if the woman drew you a map and marked it with a giant X. A burst of laughter punctuated the end of my rant. A group of 20-something women had taken over the neighboring booth, and they were listening to us with rapt attention. Story Sunday indeed. I hoped one of them recognized Bentley and told everyone they knew about his shortcomings. It was a long shot, but it was what he deserved. I stood, my smile widening at his indignant sputters. All that to say, I disrespectfully decline your offer to be your mistress. Don't contact me again, or I'll slap you with a restraining order and make sure every single person in your workplace and social circle knows you can't take no for an answer.
You fucking bitch.
I'd ordered the biggest glass of the darkest red wine, and I didn't wait for him to finish his trite insult before I tossed the full contents in his face and walked out. Once I was outside, I stopped the recording on my phone and saved it to my files. I hadn't decided whether to send it to Georgia yet. She deserved to know what her husband was doing and saying behind her back. But our relationship was complicated, so I held on to it for now. Bentley didn't follow me, though I hadn't expected him to. My lips curled into a smile at the memory of his mouth hanging open while wine dripped from his hair and chin. I'd written many film reviews excoriating the cheesy power move of throwing a drink in a guy's face, but as I hailed a cab to go home, I concluded I'd been wrong. The move may be cliche, but it was damn satisfying. Sometimes, the rom-coms got it right.
Chapter 31. Javier. Sloane and I spent a quiet Thanksgiving together before I was called away on club business. It was a holiday weekend, but that didn't stop emails from trickling into my inbox about construction, lighting, inventory, and a million things I had to take care of before the grand opening. She slept over at my house on Thursday and Friday, but we parted ways on Saturday to take care of our respective work. She acted a little strange when we said goodbye, but I had a feeling spending such a big holiday together had freaked her out, so I didn't pry. I didn't want to drive her away by pressing too hard, especially given the week's events. I was still torn up about Rhea and Penn, but at least I'd confirmed with my contact about getting the intel I needed. He'd have the first batch ready soon so I could, hopefully, set Sloane's mind at ease. Besides Sloane, the only person I saw over the weekend was Luca. He seemed to have gotten over his leaf spiral and was back to working at his family's corporate office in the city. Either that or Dante had put the fear of God in him enough to kick his ass into shape. I still didn't know why my father had put Dante on the inheritance committee, and my attempts to ask the man in question had so far been rebuffed. Maybe Dante was still upset about the time I'd roped Luca into hosting a Vegas penthouse party that ended with the cops shoving us into jail for the night. If so, that didn't bode well for a favorable vote during my first evaluation, but I'd worry about that later. I had more pressing matters at hand. "Our void system is perfect for this space," my newest contractor said. "It doesn't hit the market until late next year, but I'm happy to give you early access." "Out of the goodness of your heart, I assume?" Killian Katrakis gave me an enigmatic smile. Name number 7. Half Irish and half Greek, Killian was the CEO of the Katrakis Group Corporation, an international electronics, technology, and telecommunications conglomerate. They sold everything from cell phones and computers to TVs and commercial sounds, the latter of which was the reason for his visit today. Normally, this type of meeting was reserved for the account executives, not the CEO of the entire company. However, Kai had given me a direct line to Killian's office, and Killian had been surprisingly intrigued when I mentioned where the club was located. He'd insisted on seeing the space and matching it with one of his systems himself. "I'm a businessman, Javier," he said. "I don't do anything out of the goodness of my heart." He nodded around us. "The grand opening for this will make headlines around the world because it's attached to your name. Every club owner out there will take notice and try to compete." "That includes buying the same sound system we used on opening night?" I cocked an eyebrow. "You have a lot of faith in my ability to pull this off." The reasoning he offered for granting me early access to the void was a simple one, but I didn't buy Killian's concern over publicity for his company's latest sound system. The entire product vertical made up a fraction of the Katrakis Group's revenue compared to phones and laptops. But perhaps it was a passion project or a pride thing. Billionaires were eccentric, and if the rumors were true, the notorious bachelor was eccentric in many ways. I have faith because I recognize the same quality in you that I've seen in every successful entrepreneur, Killian said. Hunger. You don't want this to work. You need this to work because the club is a reflection of you. If it fails, you fail, and you would do anything not to fail. Unease crawled over the back of my neck. Killian had me pegged to a T, and we'd met less than an hour ago. Was I really that transparent? Or was he really that good? We finished our walkthrough of the vault. It needed work, but the bones were there. Stone floors, original crown moldings, teller enclosures that could be transformed into bottle displays. Once I cleaned it up and installed my design elements, it was going to be a hell of a space. Who's in charge of the design? Killian asked, savvy enough to steer the conversation toward safer waters after his uncanny psychoanalysis. Farrellyn Ryan from FNJ Creative. Name number 8. She was the city's premier interior designer for dining and hospitality spaces. Good choice, Killian said with an approving rumble. We've worked together on a number of projects. I knew Farrah was good, but it was reassuring to hear it from someone else. After a few more questions about the design and a handshake deal, Killian promised to send a contract over and left for another meeting. I stayed, soaking it all in. It was my second time in the vault after Alex had handed over the keys, and I was still wrapping my head around the fact that it was mine. My place to shape, mold, and design as I saw fit, with some professional input. It was my responsibility, which was both thrilling and terrifying. A familiar chime reverberated through the empty space. I glanced down, my high melting into concern when I saw who was calling. I had a lunch date with Sloane soon, but I was too anxious to let the call roll to voicemail. Is everything okay? I asked without preamble after picking up. Eduardo wouldn't call me in the middle of the day unless something was wrong. Then again, it wasn't like I had any more parents left to lose. A brief humorless smile flicked into existence at my dark humor. Coping mechanisms were coping mechanisms, no matter how morbid. I wanted to see how you were holding up and how the nightclub is going, Eduardo said. I've heard good things from Sloane, though she may be a bit biased considering the, recent developments. So news of our relationship had made its way to Bogota. I wasn't surprised. I bet the inheritance committee was watching me like a hawk. We didn't start dating until after I came up with the idea, I said. If you're worried about it compromising Sloane's judgment, don't be. She's not that type of person. She'll be honest regardless of our relationship status. Even if she were the type to go easy on me because we were dating, which she wasn't, I wouldn't want her to. I'd succeed on my own merit or not at all. I know that, mijo. But not everyone does. There are growing whispers of her conflict of interest. She's your publicist and she's one of your evaluators come May. Yet you two are involved, Eduardo said delicately. It doesn't look good. I don't care how it looks, stubbornness set into my jaw. We're consenting adults. What we do in our free time is our business, and my father's will didn't say a thing about conflicts of interest, nor did it forbid me from dating a committee member. If anyone has a problem with us dating, they can take it up with the executor of his will. Sloane is one judge out of 5, Eduardo. She won't make or break the decision. Unless there's a tie, but I see your point. A long pause preceded his next words. I've never heard you so fired up over a woman. She's not just any woman. She's everything. I almost said it. The word came so easily it would have slipped right off my tongue had its potential implications not hit me at the same time like a hollow point bullet. Sloane couldn't be my everything. Yes, I cared about her deeply, and no, I couldn't stop thinking about her. She set my blood on fire whenever she was near, and when she hurt, I hurt. She was the only person with whom I felt comfortable enough to share the secrets I'd shared. And if a genie popped out of a bottle this very second and asked me to change something about her, I wouldn't change a single thing. But all that wasn't the same as her being everything. Because if she were everything, then that meant she... That meant I... Eduardo's voice softened. I see. I didn't know what he heard in my silence, but I wasn't ready to face it. Not yet. How's the CEO search going on your end? I asked, abruptly switching subjects. I needed something to take my mind off my Sloan spiral, and the Castillo's group's seemingly eternal CEO search was as good a distraction as any. It's fine. The board probably won't make a final decision until the new year. There's strong contention over which of the candidates is better suited for the role. They should choose you. I meant it as a quip because Eduardo had never wanted to be CEO. But the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. He was included on the shortlist as a courtesy, but why wouldn't they choose him? I'd seen the other names. He could run circles around them. Plus, he wasn't an asshole like 90% of the list. His shocked laugh rolled over the line. Javier, you know this was always supposed to be a temporary arrangement. My wife would kill me if I took it on permanently. She might be more open to it than you think. Eduardo's wife was unyielding when it came to family time. But she was also a lawyer. She understood how to balance work and her personal life. And I bet Eduardo did too. You care about the company. You have the institutional knowledge. And you're good at the job. You helped my father build it into what it is today. What external candidate could possibly beat that? Silence reigned for several beats. I don't know. It's a big decision. Even if I want it, I can't guarantee the board will go for it. Just think about it. I bet the board isn't pushing it because they think you don't want it. Maybe. He sighed, the sound edged with sadness and frustration. Alberto had to go and leave us with this mess, didn't he? He always did like fucking people over. I leaned against a pillar and stared at the wall of old safe deposit boxes across from me. The sight transported me back to Colombia. My father's room. My mother's letter. The scent of old books and leather during the reading of the will. You know what I don't understand? How and why my father failed to catch the loophole in his will. He didn't stipulate the company I should be CEO of, Eduardo. Does that sound like Alberto Castillo to you? No. At least not the Alberto Castillo I knew before his diagnosis. But impending death changes people, mijo. It forces us to confront our mortality and reevaluate what's important. I snorted. Eduardo always liked to sugarcoat things when it came to my father. What are you saying? That he had a sudden change of heart while lying on his deathbed? I'm saying that in the last days of his illness, he had a lot of time to think. About the past, about his legacy, and most of all, about his relationship with you. Another heavier pause in which I could hear Eduardo turning words over in his mind. He found your mother's letter at the beginning of the year when he was getting his affairs in order. Alberto wanted to tell you about it in person, but... He hesitated. That's why I was so insistent that you visit him. I didn't know how much longer he had. And some things are meant to be shared face to face. Wisps of cold stole through me and pulled my chest tight. Don't put that burden on me, Eduardo, I said harshly. You know why I didn't want to come home. Yes, I'm not blaming you, Javier, Eduardo said, his voice gentle. I merely want to share the other side of the story. But for what it's worth, your father didn't read the letter. That was for your eyes only. He knew Patricia enough to know that was what she would have wanted. But seeing that letter from your mother, I think it forced him to think about what she would have said if she saw the two of you after her death. How she would have hated the way your relationship fell apart, and how it would have broken her heart to see him blaming you for what happened. She loved you and your father more than anything else in the world. Your rift would have devastated her. The gut punch from his words cracked the concrete wall I'd built around my chest, making my ribs ache and my throat close. Did he tell you all that? Or did you put the words in his mouth? Half and half. Your father and I were friends since we were children, and we'd confided in each other enough that he didn't always have to express his thoughts out loud for me to understand them. The safe deposit boxes blurred for an instant before I blinked the haze away. Fine. Let's pretend everything you said is true. What does that have to do with the will? I can't say for sure. He didn't tell me he was changing his will until after the fact, Eduardo admitted. I didn't know about the new inheritance clause, nor did I know I would be on the evaluation committee. But you're right. Alberto Castillo is not a man who would have overlooked such a glaring loophole, which meant he put it in there on purpose. I suspect... This time his hesitation carried a hint of caution. It was his way of simultaneously extending an olive branch and pushing you closer to your potential. He could have easily cut off your inheritance unless you followed whatever terms he dictated. Or he could have written you out of the will altogether. But he didn't. An olive branch from my father. The idea was so absurd I wanted to laugh. But Eduardo wasn't wrong. My father could have cut me off. It would have been his last big fuck you before passing. I thought he'd changed my inheritance terms so he could manipulate me into doing what he wanted even after his death. That was definitely part of it, but maybe there was more to the story. Or maybe I'm naive and delusional. He didn't sound like he'd had any change of heart during our last conversation, I said. Grow up, Javier. It's time for you to be useful for once. My phone slipped in my grip before I tightened it. I'm not saying he was a saint. He had his pride, and I also suspect he thought you would have rebuffed any overtures he made. The last thing a dying man wants is another fight with his son, Eduardo pointed out. You don't have to take everything I said as gospel. Those are my conjectures, not the hard truth. But allow yourself the possibility that it is true. And let that be your closure. Your father is gone, Javier. But you're still here. You can hold on to your grudge forever and let it consume you, or you can put the past where it belongs and move forward. Eduardo's words echoed long after I hung up. My first instinct was to reject his interpretation of events. I loved him like a father more than I did my own. But he was too biased when it came to his oldest friend and business partner. However, what he'd said made a strange, twisted sort of sense. And it scared the crap out of me. I'd clung to my resentment toward my father as a lifeboat through the storms of our relationship. Without it, I might drown beneath a sea of regrets and what-ifs. Billows of uncertainty followed me out of the vault and onto the street, where they dissipated beneath an onslaught of noise and activity. I knew they would coalesce again when I was alone. But for now, I happily pushed them to the side as I walked to my lunch date with Sloane. People could say whatever they wanted about the city, but it provided distractions like no other. Sloane was already waiting for me at the restaurant when I arrived. It was her turn to pick, and she'd chosen a tiny family-run restaurant nestled in the heart of Koreatown. It smelled incredible. Sorry I'm late. I gave her a soft kiss hello before taking the seat opposite hers. Eduardo called, and our conversation ran long.
It's okay. I got here not too long ago.
Her eyes sharpened with knowing.
Did he call about your inheritance?
Sort of. I gave her a brief summary of our conversation. When I finished, her face had softened with sympathy.
How are you feeling about what he said?
Whew, I don't know. I blew out a long breath. There was one thing my mother had forgotten to tell me in her letter. How complicated life got when we grew up. Every year on Earth added another layer of twists and drama. Life was easy when there was only black and white. It was when the line between them blurred that things got murkier. I'm conflicted, I said. The easy path is to continue hating my father, but I have to... I can't think about that right now. There's too much going on. Speaking of which, I have something for you. I slid a manila envelope across the table. Christian Harper had had it hand-delivered by messenger this morning, and I'd been carrying it around all day. I hope I didn't overstep. Thankfully, Sloane didn't call me out on my obvious deflection of topic. She opened the envelope and scanned the documents, her eyes widening with each word. When she finished, her gaze snapped up to mine.
Javier,
she breathed.
How did you...
I know someone who specializes in information retrieval. I tapped the envelope. Penn's still in the city. She hasn't had any major health issues, and she's with a new nanny. Hopefully that means George and Caroline aren't planning on shipping her abroad. It wasn't much, but I hoped it was enough to put Sloane's mind at ease. Sometimes uncertainty was worse than the pain of any knowledge.
Hopefully.
Sloane's eyes gleamed bright with emotion.
Thank you. This was... You didn't... Anyway.
She cleared her throat and slid the papers documenting Penn's whereabouts and well-being back into their envelope. Pink decorated her cheeks and neck.
You didn't have to do this, but I appreciate it. Truly.
You don't have to thank me. I was happy to do it. Our gazes lingered, the noise from the restaurant fading beneath the weight of unspoken words. Sunlight streamed through the windows, throwing shadows beneath her cheekbones and highlighting the fine blonde strands framing her face. The glacial blue pools shielding her eyes cracked, revealing a sliver of vulnerability that grabbed hold of my heart and squeezed. She was so fucking beautiful it almost hurt to look at her. I wondered if she knew that. I wondered if she knew how much she occupied my thoughts and how I counted down the minutes to seeing her again when we were apart. I wondered if I'd upended her life the way she had mine, to the point where the pieces would no longer fit if she weren't there. Because she wasn't a pit stop. She was the destination. The bullet from earlier dug deeper. I opened my mouth, but Sloane blinked and looked away before I said something I regretted. Not because I wouldn't mean it, but because it would have been too much, too fast for her. Disappointment and relief swirled in equal measure.
Speaking of calls, I got one from Rhea last night.
She said, effectively breaking the moment. She tucked a stray strand of hair behind her ear, the pink on her cheeks darkening to a dusky rose.
She said a check mysteriously showed up in her mailbox yesterday. The sender kept their identity anonymous, but the money is enough to cover at least 1 year's worth of food and living expenses.
Really? I maintained a neutral expression. That's pretty lucky. I guess good things do happen to good people.
I guess they do.
Sloane paused, then said pointedly,
I mentioned Rhea's address over Thanksgiving, didn't I? When I said I would send her money to tide her over while she finds a new job?
Did you? I picked up the menu and scanned it for something to eat. We should order soon. I was starving. I don't remember. Sloane's mouth twitched.
I'm sure you don't.
A small grin curled in response to her knowing tone. But neither of us pursued that line of conversation. Instead, we switched to something even more satisfying. Revenge.
Are we still on for Dante and Viv's party this weekend?
She asked. She'd told me her plan for Operation PW, and the party was crucial to its execution. It would also give me an opportunity to talk to Dante and hopefully get some answers. Most importantly, I'd get to spend more time with Sloane and her friends. Not that I was angling for her friends' approval or anything. But having them on my side couldn't hurt, could it? I smiled. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Chapter 32. Sloane. Operation Perry Wilson went into full effect that Saturday at Dante and Vivian's annual holiday gala. Before Josephine was born, they'd hosted it at their house, but since they didn't want to disturb the newborn, they rented out the Valhalla Club's ballroom for an intimate gathering featuring 300 of Manhattan's richest and most powerful. One of those 300 was Kai Young.
I know that look,
he said when I approached him at the bar. I'd brought Javier as my date, but we'd split to take care of our respective businesses first. Me with Kai, him with Dante.
Who are you planning to destroy?
Next to him. Isabella gave me a grin and a thumbs up when he wasn't looking. She'd offered to broach the subject with Kai, but I'd declined. This was my fight, and she'd already gone above and beyond. I think you know, I said. He's a mutual thorn in our sides.
Let me guess.
Kai glanced at his fiancée, who quickly averted her gaze and pretended to study her drink.
Initials PW?
Yes.
He's a disreputable blogger. I know you're upset about recent posts he's published.
Kai's tone indicated Isabella had ranted to him about it on more than one occasion.
But as the CEO of a media company, I can't get involved in my friend's personal fights.
This isn't personal, I said. He may be a disreputable blogger, but you've been battling him for web traffic and clicks for years. Plus, you despise the man. He's everything that's wrong with journalism.
What he does isn't journalism,
Kai said immediately. I arched an eyebrow, and after a small beat, he shook his head with a wry smile.
Point taken.
For someone like Kai, who operated by the rules and an innate sense of honor, Perry's sleazy methods were akin to smearing shit all over the business the Youngs had spent decades building. One bad apple could ruin the entire bunch. What if I told you there was a way you can beat him and make sure he won't be a problem in the future?
I'd say if something sounds too good to be true, it is.
Kai finished his drink and set it down.
But I'm listening.
I told him my plan. He listened without interruption, but when I finished, he shook his head.
He won't agree to that,
he said. He won't have a choice.
Amendment. Why would I agree to that? I want to be less associated with him, not more.
Because it won't be him. It'll be his property, but the man himself will be gone. My voice turned coaxing. Think of how great a story that would be. Kai Young transforms popular but controversial gossip blog into a shining beacon of respect in the dirty celebrity news industry. No one else would even attempt to clean up the blog's reputation. You pull it off, and you'll be a legend. Kai studied me in that quiet, thoughtful way of his. Isabella's face popped up over his shoulder again. This time, she gave me a double thumbs up. Nailed it, she mouthed.
Issa, love, stop talking to Sloane behind my back,
he said without turning around. Her face fell. How do you always know? I swear you're not human, she grumbled. But fine. I'll hang out with Ale until you're done. She and Dom better not be hooking up in the library again. She kissed him on the cheek and wandered off. Kai's gaze followed her affectionately for a second before it returned to me.
Between this and Javier's club, you know how to sell a pitch,
he said. That's my job, I inclined my head. Thank you for helping him, by the way. Your list has been incredibly helpful.
I merely gave him my contacts. It was up to him to close the deals, which he did. Securing Vuk Markovic as a business partner is no small feat.
A smile flickered over Kai's mouth.
I should have known not to underestimate him after Spain.
My senses went on high alert. What do you mean?
The blog post about you in Spain,
he said.
He reached out after it was posted and asked if I could throttle its reach. I didn't know him well, but he was quite insistent. Obviously, I couldn't guarantee anything since the Young Corporation doesn't own Perry's blog, but I could stop our outlets from picking up individual posts.
What he didn't say was that his company owned almost every major news website and media outlet. By suppressing pickup, he'd effectively killed the post. People could share it on social media, of course. But the story hadn't been juicy enough for that. Without oxygen, the embers died a quiet death. Javier hadn't said a thing about it. I'd assumed people weren't interested in the personal lives of publicists, even if Javier was involved. Maybe that was true, or maybe it had become a non-story because of what he'd done before we even started dating. Emotions swelled in my chest, and I fought to marshal them into some semblance of order.
As for your proposal, it's an intriguing one, but I can't commit to it quite yet,
Kai said, oblivious to the chaos his casual statement had incited.
I'll have to discuss it with my team.
That was what I'd expected, and it was better than an outright no. I was confident his team would see things my way after they weighed the pros and cons, because the pros far outweighed the cons. After Kai left to find Isabella, I ordered a double shot of whiskey and let it burn away the tingly lightheadedness that accompanied any thoughts of Javier. Now was not the time to blush and swoon over him. I had a revenge plan to finish enacting. Armed with fresh determination and a stomach full of hard liquor, I sauntered over to the gift table, where Tilly Denman and her friends were giggling over something. I bet my color-coordinated closet that Tilly had already swiped one of the gifts, but I wasn't here to police her kleptomaniac tendencies. In our world, Tilly and co. spread gossip faster than a wildfire through dry brush, and I was counting on them to do exactly that when I turned my back to them and pretended to take a call. "Hi, Soraya. What's wrong?" I paused for dramatic effect. "Calm down. Tell me what's wrong." The giggles behind me immediately dwindled to silence. Soraya, one name only, was one of the biggest influencers on the planet. Famous for her chatty vlogs, sexy outfits, and striking good looks, she had over 150 million followers across her platforms, and they were rabid. As in, someone once paid $2,000 for a napkin she'd used at the Met Gala. Anything she did was news, and any scandal she was involved in was big news. "No, listen to me. You can't go to his house. He's married." I lowered my voice enough to make eavesdroppers think I was discussing confidential matters, but not enough that they couldn't hear me. "If people find out you and Bryce," I walked away, suppressing a smile at the cliffhanger I'd dangled in front of Tilly and co. Bryce was another influencer with a rabid fan base. He'd recently gotten married in a splashy wedding, every second of which was documented on his YouTube channel. But there'd been rumors about him and Soraya for years. My friends had stoked those rumors through various channels leading back to Perry, and it was only a matter of minutes before confirmation of Bryce's alleged affair with Soraya reached the blogger's ears. A rational person would ask why an experienced publicist would discuss sensitive client matters in the middle of the season's biggest party, but Tilly and her friends didn't care about logic. They simply wanted drama and gossip. I'd done my part. Now I just had to sit back and watch Perry take the bait. Since my work for the night was finished, I did a quick lap around the room to say hi to clients and important players before meeting up with Vivian. Javier and I had agreed to reconvene at the bar when we were done with our tasks. Since he wasn't there, I assumed he was still talking to Dante. "Great party as usual," I said, handing Vivian a glass of champagne. She was the city's most coveted luxury event planner, so I hadn't expected anything less. "You outdid yourself." "Thanks," she smiled, faint lines of exhaustion fanning across her face. Nevertheless, she glowed in a red gown and jewels that would make the late Queen of England jealous. "I'm just glad the planning is over and done with. Remind me never to host a gala months after giving birth again. I don't know what I was thinking." Vivian and Dante could afford plenty of help with Josie, but they preferred to be more hands-on with the parenting. I didn't understand it, but I didn't have a kid, so what did I know? "Done," I said. I glanced around the room. "Where's Issa and Ale?" "Issa and Kai disappeared somewhere. I figured it was better not to ask. Ale wasn't feeling well, so Dom took her home early." "By not feeling well," Vivian arched a perfectly shaped brow. "Right," I said with a small smirk. "Good for them." Alessandra and Dominic's marriage had gone through a long, rocky stretch due to Dominic's workaholism and neglect. They even briefly divorced last year after he missed a major anniversary. But after some time apart and major remorse and lifestyle changes on his part, they'd worked things out and were stronger than ever. "Speaking of couples," Vivian glanced over my shoulder. "Incoming." My pulse tripped when a warm hand rested on the small of my back. I didn't have to look to know who it was. The shape and feel of Javier's touch was so ingrained in me, I could pick it out while blindfolded.
"Hey, Vivian,"
he said easily.
"I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you mind if I steal Sloane away for a minute?"
"Not at all." Her eyes glinted with amusement. I assume my husband is now free to talk? He responded with a grin that was all charm and a hint of bashfulness.
He's all yours. Sorry for hogging him all evening. We had quite a lot to discuss.
I imagine you did. Vivian winked at me on her way past. Enjoy the rest of the party. You are such a kiss-ass, I said when she left.
Me?
Javier placed a hand over his heart.
I prefer to think of it as being charming.
A charming kiss-ass.
I'm simply trying to ingratiate myself with your friends,
he said.
Unfortunately, Alessandra left before I could work my magic on her, and I'm not sure where Isabella went. I think Vivian likes me, though.
Not after you monopolized Dante's attention all evening, I quipped, swallowing a bubble of laughter. Speaking of which, how did the conversation with him go?
It went.
Some of Javier's good humor slipped.
He was vague about why my father named him in his will. Just said that they respected each other as businessmen, and my father trusted his judgment. He did give me an earful about the time I got Luca arrested, though.
So he didn't answer, I surmised.
Basically.
It wasn't like Dante to be so evasive. Perhaps he didn't know why Alberto had put him on the committee either. I would ask Vivian to do some digging for us. If Dante was honest with anyone, it was his wife. But this wasn't her problem, and she was busy enough with Josie and work. I didn't want to add to her plate.
I guess it doesn't really matter except to slake my curiosity. He's a judge whether or not I know the reason,
Javier said.
How did your talk with Kai go?
I filled him in as we meandered toward the exit. We hadn't planned on leaving early, but Vivian and Dante were busy entertaining guests, and an unspoken understanding drew us away from the crowd and into the quiet hall next to the ballroom.
So it went a lot better than mine,
Javier quipped when I finished.
You think he'll say yes?
I'm 90% sure he will. Kai was a businessman, and my proposal made perfect business sense. However, my Perry plan wasn't the takeaway from that conversation. The blog post about you in Spain. He reached out after it was posted and asked if I could throttle its reach. The tingles from earlier returned in full force, especially now that Javier was standing right there, looking more delicious than any man had a right to look, with his tuxedo and rumpled hair. He'd eschewed a tie, breaking dress code, but it worked on him. Everything worked on him. He was the epitome of effortless charm. His eyebrows shot up when I grabbed the front of his shirt and pushed him into the nearest bathroom. Like everything else at Valhalla, it was spotless. Marble floors, gleaming mirrors, custom-made scents piped through hidden diffusers. It resembled a celebrity dressing room more than it did a public facility, and it would do just fine for what I had in mind. Remember our office meeting the other week? I locked the door behind us. The one we had right after Ayana left. Javier leaned against the counter, his gaze darkening around the edges as he realized why I'd brought us here. The air shifted, growing heavier, denser, hotter.
I might recall a thing or two about it.
Desire strung taut beneath his languid drawl. He didn't move, but his eyes tracked me like a predator's, dark and hungry, as I slunk toward him. Well, I stopped in front of Javier, the toes of my heels kissing the tips of his dress shoes. I hooked my fingers through the loops of his belt and pulled him an inch closer. I thought tonight might be the right night to return the favor. My husky whisper didn't sound like me, but dragging someone into a bathroom so I could have my way with them didn't feel like me, so it was a night of firsts. Javier's breath quickened. But still, he didn't move when I undid his belt and dragged the teeth of his zipper down. Electric anticipation hummed in my veins, but I didn't rush. I wanted to savor this, and there was something so arousing about the weight, about the ravenousness of his gaze and the subtle tightening of his muscles, like it took all his willpower not to bend me over and take me any way he wanted me. Heat ignited between my thighs at the thought. I sank to my knees as I peeled his pants and briefs down, my mouth watering when I saw the thick, throbbing erection waiting for me. He was so fucking big, and hard enough to make my pulse spike. Beads of pre-cum dripped from the tip, and when I flicked my tongue out for a taste, a whole body shudder rippled through him. That was all the encouragement I needed. I sealed my mouth around the head of his cock and sucked, teasing the sensitive underside with my tongue while I stroked his length with both hands.
Fuck.
Javier let out a hiss, his head falling back as I worked my mouth down to where my hands were. I was technically giving him pleasure, but my skin flamed like I was the one being teased. Every suck went straight to my clit. Every twist and stroke coiled tight in my belly until I moaned with need. I took him deeper, hoping it would satiate my gnawing hunger. The wet, sloppy sounds of the blowjob mingled with his loud groans as he grasped fistfuls of my hair to steady himself while he panted and bucked against my mouth. The gentle tug against my scalp sent goosebumps scattering across my skin. My nipples hardened to painful points, but I didn't get a chance to relish in the sensation before his cock hit the back of my throat. I gagged, my eyes watering and drool leaking from the corners of my mouth as I struggled to take him all the way. Javier's hands gentled, but my whimper of protest had them tightening again. Rough amusement laced his chuckle.
You like that, don't you?
He tugged, bringing my gaze to his. Lust carved grooves beneath his cheekbones and etched lines of tension between his brows.
Fuck, Luna, you look so good on your knees choking on my cock.
My thighs clenched at his filthy words. Tiny flutters disrupted my stomach as he held my head and pushed the final inch down my throat. I choked again, his cock so deep that my nose grazed his stomach, and just as little pinpricks danced across my vision, he pulled out until only the tip rested on my tongue. I managed to suck in a gasp of air before he drove into me again and again and again, harder and faster each time until the brutal rhythm matched the painful pounding of my heart. The knot of need in my stomach coiled tighter. I was so flushed, I was sure water would steam if it touched my skin. And despite the rawness of my throat, I couldn't stop one hand from drifting between my legs.
Not with your hand.
Javier's harsh command stopped me a second before I made contact. I let out another whimper of protest, but this time, he was unrelenting. His body shifted, but he didn't let go of my hair as he nudged his shoe between my legs. He ground the tip against my most sensitive spot, eliciting a muffled yelp.
Push your underwear to the side first.
I was so desperate for more friction, I didn't think. I simply did as he asked, sliding my soaked thong to the side before I straddled his shoe. I spread my legs wider, the beautiful pressure and rub of leather against naked, tender flesh making me ache all over. My moans built in intensity as I picked up speed, grinding shamelessly against his shoe while he fucked my mouth. I didn't care how obscene this was, or whether there were people on the other side of the door, I was too lost in a haze of sensation. The bumps and ridges of the laces scraped against my swollen clit and sent sharp lightning bolts of pleasure through my body. I couldn't believe how wet I was. I was dripping all over the floor, like this was the first time I'd ever come close to orgasm. Still, it wasn't enough. I needed more friction. And I held on to his thigh to steady myself as I sucked and ground harder. His face fucking picked up speed to match mine, and my mind went fuzzy, my hips jerking, my movements frantic as the need built and built, and the pressure inside me exploded at the same time warm, thick ropes of cum splashed down my throat. Javier's loud, guttural groan mixed with my strangled cries as the fuzziness fully blanked me into a haze of white. Shudder after shudder racked my body while I rode out my orgasm mindlessly. Everything was so warm and slick and nice, and when the haze finally cleared and Javier's fingers unknotted from my hair, I slumped against his leg, too exhausted to stand. Strong hands unwound my arms from his thigh and picked me up. Javier set me on the counter, his movements smooth and fluid.